Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, August 17th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. Are you with us?
We sure are.
We're here.
Okay. All right. How are you doing today? Did you have a good week?
Yeah, we had a good week. It was awfully dry. We're back to drought. So
I don't know.
I know there are lots of people getting inundated, but it wasn't us. And so Jim ate dust and had, you know, fewer jobs because you can't cut grass that's not growing. But we've made it through, and there was a beautiful healing rain last night, and Jim didn't have to eat a bit of dust, so that was good today.
All right.
I guess the only thing to mention is 2 weeks down the line, and that is that we're going to be playing a past program here so that Jim and I can be part of the opening of Homecoming. And Homecoming has been closed. People, you know, say they're going to come and then they get married in Italy. That was one. Or they lose their ride in Denver. That was another one. If anybody would like to sponsor Lorena, on a plane flight from Denver to Louisville, just let us know at contact@llresearch.org. Poor Lorena just hasn't been able to find a way to come. So anyway, it's a wonderful seeing that coming up. But other than that, we've just been living our lives and having a good time with each other and having fun. How about you?
Okay, well, it's been a busy week, definitely. Just had a lot of things going on at home and with business. But, you know, good things. So can't complain. So, well, I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff then.
All
and
right.
This is from Kuo from November 12th, 2006. Consciousness is not yours alone. You share the innermost identity of yourself with all that there is. Walk, my sister, out of the small rooms and dim hallways of fear, and come out into the outdoors of wind and water and fire and earth. Come from the local to the infinite. Come from the world of detail to the world of the four directions, the elements and the powers. Come to the great cross of life, the vertical reach to the infinite, the horizontal reach within incarnation to loving and being loved. And know that it is in the little things that you shall create a new heaven and a new earth. May you do each little thing as if it were a great honor and privilege. May you shine as the lighthouse you are.
Thanks, Monica. I have strayed far afield from the law of one material strictly, because I think that sometimes it's nice to hear one of the other voices of the Confederation. It actually does include Ra, those of Ra, all the Kuo groups. The Kuo group includes the Ra group. It's three groups, Hatton of fourth density love, La Tui of fifth density wisdom, and Ra of sixth density unity. And they got together in the first place as an answer to my request, which I always prayed before channeling, to please give me a contact that is I can handle consciously, that is stable, and that comes from Jesus the Christ. And then when one does come in, I challenge it. But I ask for the highest and best contact I can hold. And actually, this is the highest and best contact I can hold, and that's Kuo. The mix of the three makes it possible, I guess, for them to step the energy down, step it down again, and step it down again. And that way, I can carry that energy and the same basic feelings, the concepts that I have to translate into words, without any damage to myself. I've been channeling Kuo since shortly after the Ra contact, and gosh, that's been 20-some years.
Right.
Anyway, back to this beautiful piece from Kuo. There are two ways you can look at your life, and sometimes they're close together and sometimes they're widely divergent. One way is to look at yourself according to your qualities. I'm a person, I'm white, I'm a woman, I'm 69 years old, I love a man, I live in Kentucky, that kind of thing that you identify yourself by in most conversations. And they don't ever ask you, well, what do you be? They always ask, what do you do? And it's poorly thought out for that question to be the reigning thing, but, you know, you attend parties long enough and you'll discover that there's nowhere to go. That's what they ask. So anyway, consciousness is a part of yourself that doesn't involve itself strictly in doing the chores and living your life. It is a steady state because it is the creator, and it enters all of us in infinite supply, comes up through the chakras, goes out through the top of the head, back to the infinite. And while it is with us in infinite supply, we can block it, or we can use it, or we can not think about it much and just sort of sometimes be better than others. So I'm a great believer in trying my best to be my highest and best, and thereby be able to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth. It certainly is not that I'm anything special. I'm definitely a bozo. But I know that I have this consciousness, and all I have to do is just inwardly reach. Are you there? Yes. It's wonderful. And you ought to try it sometime, because when you ask that question, you definitely get a response. You get pressure back. You and everyone else and I are one. One consciousness. It's not the consciousness that is involved in our thoughts. It is the consciousness of intuition and feeling and insight and knowing. It is the consciousness of a citizen of infinity. While we're here, you could say, as the Kuo group did, that we're local. Well, here we are. You know, we are local. We're parked here in a body that some could view as a prison, others could view as a very powerful and useful vehicle to use while we're here, and every opinion in between. But the consciousness is that part of you that will be with you, not just in this incarnation, but always. You've only brought part of yourself here to this incarnation. And you've given yourself the challenge of having to remember who you are. Having to remember that your kingdom is not in this world of endless detail. Your kingdom is not of this world. No matter how much you do in the world, your consciousness is not of that world. It is other than because of the fact that we don't know how to be one. We're endlessly splintered and separated by all kinds of different categories. So we're looking to get into that land where we see at the soul level, and we see everyone, including that part of him or her that is consciousness. So we can greet the worst person in the world knowing that that person is exactly equal to me because of the consciousness that he or she carries. You may have done terrible things. The question is not what he's doing. The question is, of what is he made? And we are all made of love. Now, that action that a criminal has taken is certainly can't be easily seen to be of love. But if you go back into it and you look at things in a psychological way and scratch your head and move things around and you begin to see how the person works, you see how this person has distorted love because of fear. So, if no matter what your opinion of yourself, I hope that you are able to drop that opinion if it does not include the consciousness of love. Because you haven't included the most important thing about you, the thing that enables you not simply to be part of the chain of life through your children, but part of the life that is in the eternal now, just as our program says, in the now. Monica and I and Jim hope that we are in the now with you now. I love
okay, beautiful.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I love the great cross of life illustration here because we live so much on the horizontal, you know, doing our errands and doing our honor duties so that we get everything done according to the way we think we should. And, you know, it's very horizontal and it's very linear. And then there's this part of the cross of life that reaches upwards into infinity and downwards also into infinity so that we are, there we are, both actions taking place at the same time. If we can but become able to feel it in ourselves. If you doubt that you are bigger than this incarnation, I would strongly suggest that you simply look at yourself in the mirror one day and keep looking, not at the mirror, but into your eyes. Look deeply into your eyes and keep looking. I will not go further than that because everybody's experience is different. But it tends to put one right into the heart, right into the being, right into the vertical shaft of the cross of life. And I love the thoughts of doing little things with an awareness of their sacredness. I attempt to do that in everything that I do. It's certainly been a challenge in this last couple of years because I haven't been able to do what I normally do. My schedule is shot. Let's face it, if you're in the hospital 9 times within 1 year and you keep trying to survive and then boom, just like Sisyphus, you fall down with your rock to the bottom of circle of hell and up you start pushing that rock with your nose. That's the way it sometimes feels. I mean, you can talk about my laps, for instance, that I walk around the house to get exercise. I'd been building up, you know, I did, you know, 1 lap and 5 and 10. I actually was up to 30 laps around the house or, you know, the better part of a quarter mile before I had to sit down. And then the other operation started and I never got back to that. Now I'm glad if I can even get into double digits. That's new for me. At any rate, whatever I'm doing in my life, the question remains the same. How can I treat what I'm doing as a sacred thing, and how can I live up to that sacredness? So no matter how busy you are, you know, give a thought and reach out for the infinite in every little thing that you do, and you will truly shine as a lighthouse that you are.
Okay, beautiful. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
No, I don't think I could add anything to that. That was comprehensive and well done.
Okay, wonderful. And it's funny because I didn't remember this particular reading, and yet just a few weeks ago sent Carla a birthday card that said, "You are a lighthouse," and I had no idea. So how's that for synchronicity? Yeah.
I love a synchronicity.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go to our first question is from Curtis. And Curtis says, "I have recently stumbled onto your work, and I'm very delighted to see the effort put forth by you and your team. I have acquired an audio version of the sessions and would say I'm a little ways into book 2. My question has to do with the seeing of numbers 444. My father passed about 3 years ago, and since then, this number has been very powerful in my life. I feel that he had to leave in order for myself and others to progress, but I'm curious as to what this number truly indicates. You may have touched on this later in your books, but is it a sign of contact from Ra to get my attention? Could it possibly be a sign of the coming fourth density change? I'm 22 years old, and I've had a pretty wild last 3 years dealing with the spiritual and supernatural. I find myself believing wholeheartedly in your work, and it truly brings me so much joy. Sorry for the lengthy email, but I've been on the hunt for answers for quite a while. Thank you for reading this and for all you have done. Sincerely yours, Curtis."
Okay. Curtis, I'm so glad to talk to you. I was curious about 4 when you brought it up, or curious about what people might say. And there are different systems of numbers that would say different things. I would depend the most, I suppose, on a reference that I saw both in an astrologer's discussion of it and in the discussion of a completely other kind of specialist who believed that 4 meant something. Now, I tend to mix the meaning with, instead of just a 4, it's 444. I tend to think that probably has the same meaning as gematria when Jesus, for instance, suggests that you should love your neighbor as yourself. And somehow he says, well, how many times should I forgive? And Jesus says, 7 times. I think, anyway, he says 7 times 7. That's gematria. And he's saying that quality of the sevenness is intensified by its repetition. You'll notice that master numbers are not 22, 33, so forth. They're not single numbers. They're 2. Now, the four in the stuff that I read tended to suggest that four was a number that signified, among other things, completion. My guess is, and this has nothing to do with the raw material because we did not ask him about this. I'm sure we would have in the fullness of time, but we ran out of time in 1984 for Dawn. Anyway, I believe that it probably has to do with a message from your dad. Because 4 is also a kind of completion number. And 444 would mean I'm done, I'm done, I'm done. And I think what you said here about, you know, my father had to leave in order for others and you to progress. And I think that he was trying to tell you that he didn't have to leave, but that he was done. He was done. He was done. And that's a happy use of the I'm done. It's not mad or anything. It's just, son, I'm done. It was okay for me to go, you know. This was my appointed time, and it didn't have anything to do with your progression. It simply had to do with my time to go. So, you know, lift up from that, Curtis, and lift away from trying to make anything seem like anything. Instead, take this incident and write it down. You can write down my opinion and others' opinions. And each time something occurs in your life that you want to, that you feel is crucial, write it down. And you begin to see a pattern that would indicate that there's a lot more communication over the veil of death than is, has ever been previously thought. It certainly isn't, for the most part, in words. Because they are coming to you from a place that does not use words. Now, seances will often bring up a personality shell that has words. But actually, that personality shell, if you listen to seances from now until Christmas, you're going to hear person after person go, golly, can you really see me? Am I really here? You can see me, son? Is that right? You know, you don't really get much sense out of a person, the personality shell that has been drifting around, that from a person that, you know, it's held together by whom he loved and whom he was concerned about, and that creates a shell, a thought form that can be accessed by spiritualists. And it's real. But the thing of it is, it doesn't tell you much. It doesn't build your intelligence. Unless you're unusually lucky and you get hold of an entity that is not coming in on that frequency, but is coming in from a place where it is possible to not just to respond to questions and say, golly, I'm so glad I'm here, but also to have original material and be able to communicate like that. I have seen a good many seances, and I have seen exactly one real, one person that I thought I would stand up before anybody and say, this is a true materialization medium. They're rare, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. By the way, his name was James Tingley. He was a reverend in the Spiritualist Church, and I was absolutely amazed and delighted at what he offered in terms of subjective information. At any rate, I think it is a message from your dad that holds the power of four, that peculiar kind of completion, and that has the intensification of the number being repeated. I purposefully did not look in my favorite book that says things about numbers, because if I did, I probably wouldn't want to look further, so I never did get there. But you can certainly do that. Numerology is an old, old science. Now, before I leave this question, I want to leave something in everybody's mind about the nature of letters and numbers. One of my best friends in this life, one whom I only met personally for a short time, and she died of cancer some years ago, was named Dana, and she worked with the not the numbers but the letters and created a beautiful work, which I edited for her after her death, and it's a book you can order, The Alphabet Mosaics, isn't that right?
That's right.
And we also have it up for free on our site. And it's just a very intuitive and poetic, effort to look into each letter and see what the characteristics of that letter were. So for numerology, go to the library and you'll probably find three books to take home that tell you about four. The thing of it is, each one will undoubtedly be somewhat different. But that does not mean that the numbers do not contain meaning. I'm convinced they do. I'm not convinced that we've figured it out yet.
Okay, great. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
Actually, I don't have anything to add to that either. I think that she did a good job with that, and anything I'd have to say would be gilding the lily, and the lily's just fine.
Carla, you're just on a roll tonight.
Well, it's about to end if you ask the next question. That question's for Jim.
Okay, the next question. I want to let everybody know the next question is a continuation from last week. We spent the whole hour on the topic of sexual energy transfer, so we've got a couple of follow-up questions on that, so Carla and Jim can elaborate on that a little more. I want to let everybody know the number to call in if you would like to ask a question or comment on this topic or another topic, 646-595-2294. 646-595-2294. Press the 1 key if you want to ask your question live or join the conversation, and you can go to blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch if you want to listen to past shows, and if this gets you intrigued enough, you want to go back and listen to last week's show about the sexual energy transfer topic. So the next question is from the bringforth.org forum from Plenum. Can you elaborate on this quote? Now, here's a quote from the raw material. It's session 49.2. Questioner, I have a question here from Jim first. He says, for the past 9 years, I've had what I call frontal lobes experiences in the preconscious state. You know what? Did I read this last week?
Yes.
I'm going to stop. I did.
Sounds
you know
familiar.
What? All of a sudden, it seems familiar. Okay. So I guess, did y'all want to... I know why I'm reading it again. There was a little bit more I think we were going to elaborate on the answer. Unless you would you like to elaborate some more on the answer or Ra's answer about the mind body complex orgasm and mind becoming integrated? So,
sure.
Okay, I think that's why we had it on the list again. Okay, sorry about that interruption. All right. The question was a combination of pleasure and pressure beginning in the frontal lobes and spreading in pulses through the whole brain feels like an orgasm in the brain. Okay, now Ra says, we scan the questioner and find some pertinent information already available which regards the physiological disposition of this particular part of the brain. The experiences described and experienced are those distillations which may be experienced after a concentration of effort upon the opening of the gateway, or indigo, mind complex, so that experience of a sacramental or violet ray may occur. These experiences are the beginnings of that which, as the body, the mind, and the spirit become integrated at the gateway or indigo level, may then yield not only the experience of joy, but the comprehension of intelligent infinity which accompanies it. Thus, the body complex orgasm and mind complex orgasm becoming integrated may then set forth the proper gateway for the spiritual complex integration and its use as a shuttle for the sacrament of the fully experienced presence of the one infinite creator. Thus, there is much to which the questioner may look forward to. Now, Plenum then asks, this seems quite fascinating that not only the body may experience an orgasm, but the mind can too. I assume the spirit joins the party as well, and that the spirit can orgasm.
The last part about the spirit being able to orgasm, I'm not sure about. But I think the most important part of the response from Ra here has to do with the those distillations which may be experienced after a concentration of effort upon the opening of the gateway or indigo mind complex. What I was doing at this time, I was living on my land as part of the back to the land movement back in the 70s by myself. And in the mornings, I would take time to read and to think, to meditate, and to engage in a process of self-therapy, which I had learned some years before at the Adventure Trail Survival School in Black Hawk, Colorado, up about 10,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains. A fellow there by the name of T.D. Linga was teaching this course, and the whole idea there was that you could begin to discover those blockages of the natural flow of energy that happens in the brain and do something about removing those blockages so that this natural flow could, again, flow into the frontal lobes and release the dormant energy that is there in everybody. So in the mornings, I would look at whatever dreams I could remember from the night before, and I'd write. I'd do some journaling and some thinking and trying to figure out exactly how my mind had been formed around certain concepts and ideas that may or may not be helpful in continuing my growth and in continuing to develop into an open-hearted person who wanted to be of service to others and wanted to realize my full potential, if possible. So this essaying was the work that I was doing, and the distillation, I think, is what Ross talking about as the fruit of this work. A lot of work goes into working on yourself to really discovering who you are, to knowing yourself, the old dictum, know thyself. And it takes a while because we are raised not just by parents, but by peer pressure, by teachers, by friends, by neighbors, by everybody that we see as an example in our lives. And every culture develops ways of teaching and passing on the cultural biases and mores to the younger generation. And sometimes culture is more or less successful in doing this, and I don't think there's been a totally successful culture on the planet yet. But in my particular case, there was a lot of work I had to do about overcoming repressed memories and cutting off, seeing the energy that I had as a child cut off by the society around me, because in order to fit into the society around you, there were pieces of you that were not acceptable. And, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's got a certain way of approaching life. We come with pre-incarnative choices. We come with biases and attitudes. We come with a certain knowledge that's inherent in ourselves. And sometimes when you begin to express that individuality, we get slapped down. And we get told, well, that's just not the way that you should do things. So each of us has the opportunity, if we want to take it, to go back and to discover those things that are keeping us from really realizing our potential and being what Linga would call a full-brained human being, being able to circuit the energy from the old brain, the mammalian brain, which is up to your ears, from the back of your head to your ears, into the frontal lobes, which is from your ears to the forehead. There's 3/8 of your brain is dormant, and most people don't know what that part of the brain is for. Well, it turns out that it's there and ready to go, ready to circuit energy into it, if we can just remove the blockages that have been put there by the enculturation process. So that's what I was doing every morning when I was living on my land in my cabin. I would work on the dreams, I would work on essaying, and I'd try to figure out how I could free more energy and get my brain working as a unified system. And in the mornings, the preconscious state is when this distillation, this experience of the frontal lobes being energized began to happen for me. Last week, Monica, you asked if these frontal lobes experiences were the same as an orgasm. And I said then no, but I really should have said, well, yes and no. Yes, because the experience of the orgasm or the frontal lobes in the brain is the same, but there was no precursor of sexual activity beforehand. It just seemed to happen on its own, and there was no orgasm of a genital nature involved. It was just in the brain. So what seemed to be happening then, according to Ra at least, was that there was a beginning of an opening into the Indigo Ray Energy Center, the Gateway Center, that would allow me to blend both the eventually the body orgasm, the mind orgasm, and use the spirit as a shuttle to make contact with the intelligent infinity, or, as Rob put it, the fully experienced presence of the one infinite creator. Now, I never felt like I did that last part there. I think that's still something to come. And all of this has developed over the years into other types of experiences. But the necessary ingredient for any of this to happen is to do this self-therapy, to somehow remove those blockages that have been placed there by the enculturation process, so that the natural energy of the brain can begin circulating forward into the frontal lobes, and then all kinds of things begin to happen. And as I said in the question to Ra there, sometimes there were visions and voices that I really didn't understand, and to this day I still don't understand a lot of those. I mean, I don't think that understanding is really a significant a necessary part of the whole process. What's necessary is that you really get in there, begin investigating who you are, and to try to find out who you are, so that you can know that self. And then Ra in the later on in the contact said, after you know yourself, then it's important to accept yourself as you are, a 360-degree human being that has strengths and weaknesses. And then after you're able to accept yourself, then to become the creator. So that's it sounds like a pretty simple process, but I think it's one that takes a while. It takes, in our way of measuring time and experience, it takes a while to do this. But it is extremely worthwhile. It's really, I think, what we're all here to do in one way or another is to become a fully realized human being.
Well,
it is to be noted that when the 6.5 years where Jim was on the land, he would get up from his morning musings and work like a beaver. He built his own homestead. It was beautiful. He took me to see it when we were first together, and I loved it so much. I thought, oh my God, I love this man. It was just wonderful. And he built that. Very nice place to live. How big was it? 16 square?
16 by 20 log cabin. It was sort of small.
But it had everything you need, including an extra chair for a guest. And would work. He made a line, dug out and built a root cellar, and built a beautiful privy. When you're living on the land, as it is off the grid, you have to think of things like this. You don't have indoor plumbing. You don't have running water. You know, you have to plan these things carefully. Anyway, he created a beautiful place to go to the bathroom. He had a cabin for guests to sleep in, and then he had a little home for bees. He had all his beekeeping equipment there. He kept bees also. So he worked really, really hard all the time, but he gave himself from awakening until noon to seek the part of himself that we would call vertical. Then he went out and did lots of horizontal stuff, very hard. And then at dusk he would quit. He would have the supper because the beans had been cooking on the stove all day, and he would have his beans and chapatis. And he would sit out on the front porch and watch it get dark, listen to the sounds of, tree frogs? And
whippoorwills.
Whippoorwills, yeah. And then watch the rising of the lightning bugs.
The lightning bugs.
Yeah, they'd start low, and then by, 8:39 at night, or when it was good and dark, they'd be very high. I don't know why they do that. At any rate, fascinating lifestyle, very, very challenging. And he left all this glory in order to work with us, which floored me at the time, and I have to say still does. It was an incredible sacrifice
He'd made himself a beautiful life, and he thought that he would live and die on that property, just like his teacher, T.D. Lingo, which Judy Collins, in her book that just came out, called Lingo the Drifter. Mr. Jim says, wow, my teacher was known by Judy Collins. We love Judy Collins' music. Anyway, I just wanted to say that he didn't just dream. He also worked very hard in the physical and always has. In our marriage also. Hard, hard physical work. And then in the evening, you know, we soak and listen and watch the lightning bugs arise.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I'd like to have a conversation with you about some of that stuff at some point, Jim. About the physical, you know, how you pulled all that off. That's pretty cool. A lot of people are into that now. But I'm going to go ahead and go to the next question from Shinar. Can you comment on these, or can you, Carla and Jim, comment on Shinar's comments, which he had posted in the bringforth.org forum? This has to do with the Kundalini. The Kundalini involves more than just the serpent rising to the spirit. Now, these are Shinar's comments, okay? It's not reading from Ra here. Kundalini involves more than just the serpent rising to the spirit. It also represents the male and female aspects and the need for them to be united into one in order to awaken the Kundalini. This is why you often see the symbols of two serpents rather than one. I recall a post recently asking about the male and female aspects in fourth density. The Kundalini is a different force compared to prana. They're the opposite sides of the same coin in the realm of duality. One is a passive feminine force, a sustaining one, prana. The other one is a masculine driving force, kinetic, one that moves. Balancing the two is crucial. Only focusing on one results in very special things, one that might be explored, of course. But question is, are they relevant to the one who is currently in his or her respective learning experience? It also points to the ever-present need to balance the natural duality of the creation in such a way that neither pole becomes prominent. Harmony is what we always seek after. Neither the male nor the female aspects of creation are the goal. The goal is to understand how the two are one, harmonizing each within the one. Seeking the divine feminine does not mean seeking the female aspect of oneself. It means seeking the goddess within, a term that's not really appropriate in defining the true identity of the goddess, which is actually androgynous. The goddess within, the Kundalini, cannot be activated, awakened, until one realizes the duality of their nature and their connection to the one. When this occurs, the androgynous nature of one's true being, the goddess, awakes and becomes the divine conduit, gateway, portal between the spirit and matter, the lower and higher, south and north, physical and metaphysical.
Okay. Hello, Shinar. It's wonderful to be with you. Couple of things on my mind about this question. First of all, about the dual serpent, I wonder if it's occurred to you that the way that the DNA spirals up is double. It's a double helix. I was wondering if you had thought of that, because it's almost exactly the same. It would look exactly the same as the dual serpent. You're working in this question in the area of high metaphysics, I would say, working with the subconscious mind way down into the roots of consciousness, down into the archetypical mind of the archetypes. And we were asking in book four about the archetypes, and we only got the first seven asked about it. And it's so sad that we didn't get to go further with that. We just cut off in the middle because of Don's death. Because it's such a fascinating thing, and it's one way to look at male and female. The basic tenor of the first two cards of the mind in the system that Ra gave us, it can't be found anywhere but in the Ra material, is the, help me here, Jim, the energetic going out of the male
I'm the reaching.
I'm talking about where the feminine is in a cage.
Oh, the first card, the major arcanum.
Right. Anyway, I think that it helps to realize that it's suggested in the archetypes that we worked on. Ra suggests that the nature of the male, as you said, is reaching, and the nature of the feminine is awaiting the reaching, being all just totally fine, you know, within herself, and A, if you want to call, that's fine. If you don't, I'm good. and it's I haven't gotten to the point where I can really talk about the archetypes with any authority. It's just such a deep subject. We've had a couple of weekend seminars on it, and we've pondered everything, and we're heading towards another one of those soon. And Janara, I think you would probably enjoy it greatly. At any rate, you just have to realize this is a part of the mind where, as you said, male and female are not male and female. It's like, do you have a male plug or do you have a female plug? You know, it's like that. It's a question of how the parts work. So it's thrown around. We think we know what a male is. We think we know what a female is. And we can describe them physically as far as human males and females. What we can't describe and what the archetypes try to describe is the actual nature of the energy of masculine and feminine. Now, the Kabbalah has that tree of life, which has, in the left-hand pillar, has the female traits. The right-hand pillar has the masculine traits, both good and bad. And then there are some traits that are left in the middle pillar. And the balancing, the wholeness of us is not just in having a male and a female side, but in allowing our feminine to express itself, allowing our masculine to express itself, and allowing those two to become so balanced that we are working in the middle pillar of ourselves. Now, as to how that kundalini works, I sometimes wish that we wouldn't have jumped so hard on that phrase back in the 60s when I was a kid. It was already, you know, all the rage, new age, you know, kundalini. And certainly it's a time-honored kind of study in the Indian, that is the Asian Indian way of life. And you can spend your incarnation working on that particular brand of yoga. But I think it's probably that Ra probably captures the way I like to think of male and female as they talk about the kundalini. And I just looked it up. You can do the same thing. And part of what they say here is you have two kinds of energy. We are attempting then as entities in any true color of this octave to move the meeting place of inner and outer natures further and further along or upwards along the energy centers. The two methods of approaching this with sensible method are first the seating within oneself of those experiences which are attracted to the entity through the South Pole. Each experience will need to be observed and experienced, balanced, accepted, and seated within the individual. As the entity grows in self-acceptance and awareness of catalyst, the location of the comfortable seating of these experiences will rise to the new true color entity. The experience, whatever it may be, will be seated in red ray and considered as to its survival content first, and so forth. I'm not going to read the rest of this. All you have to do is go to liveone.info and then use the search function and put in Kundalini, and it'll give you a couple pages of what Ross said about the Kundalini, and you know, when Don asked about it. So, see, having all of this in your mind now, what I would think is nice, is the best model of male and female, is to see that energy that's moving through us all the time is that which can be molded, that which can be used. And it depends on how high we want to reach and how well we have prepared for the reaching as to where the reaching will lead us, you know, what is awaiting for us at that vibration. If you can keep in mind that the nature of the masculine within you is the reaching within you, and that you have an infinite supply of this moving through you at all times, it's the Creator's love, you realize you can mold it and yourself as you wish. And you can free and open your energy centers as you sit down to meditate and do this work. You know, open them sequentially. Open them, as Ross said, seriatim, one after the other, from the red upwards. So that when you're trying to do work that is of indigo ray, that you are not stifled in this by some blockage or partial blockage of an energy center, which keeps you from receiving the full force of the Creator's energy. So here you are, you're reaching as from within incarnation, and there are forces that are unseen that are awaiting the reaching, whether they be that which will give you a channeled answer to a question, or whether that be the soul of something like an opera or a book or a stage play, where the author is vibrating at a certain vibration, and he's able to draw the audience with him into whatever energy center he has been working from. So we all have this male, female, so-called polarity. And what we're hoping to do is so seat within ourselves that awareness of ourselves and you know, awareness of catalyst. At the end of the day, we need to be aware of what's happened, what moved me, what was catalyst for me today. And then sit down and work at that, at balancing that, at opening that, at, you know, just fully accepting yourself as well as understanding how you're made. You accept that. And even as you accept you are as you are, you may certainly work to be better. But it starts out with you accepting and even falling in love with yourself and taking good care to do this work. And then you will be more and more able to use the upward spiraling light that is available to us at all times in an infinite supply in order to be a person that has more sound thoughts or more inspired writing or singing or dancing or whatever. It's a wonderful question, and I just think sometimes we are so incredibly and infinitely various, and we come together in so many unexpected ways. I noticed at the closing of the Olympics, one of Jim's and my favorite dancing groups, Stomp, did a part of it. Isn't that right, Jim?
That's right.
And I was just so tickled at something that echoed from way back in Jim's and my early marriage, where Stomp comes on, and they work with things like garbage can lids and brooms and, you know, the most humble things in the world. And they make, by stomping and banging and clanging and just in general making noise, they make these wonderful rhythms and oh, powerful stuff. Anyway, I was so happy to see them popping right up at something that's very new and you know, they were just as wonderful as ever. Nikki, where did I go wrong? What do you have to say?
Oh, I thought you did very well. Looks like we're almost out of time.
Oh, God.
Yes, we are. And we do have a couple of questions left over. So for those of you who didn't get your question answered today, we'll definitely take up where we left off next Friday. And Carla, Jim, we have just a couple of minutes left. Do you have any closing comments?
Well, I do want to say again that we're sorry to be away from this program, but we're going to be local for one Friday night where we're greeting 39 people into our home.
Right.
I'm not saying our household that many people. We have a canopy pitched in the backyard where everybody can fit under, and we get together under that. And then when lunchtime comes or breakfast or whatever meal, people serve themselves from a buffet. Well, you know, we put it out, man. We put the ham and the cheese and the bread and buffet. You know, that's a buffet, right? and the utensils out so that people can get themselves a sandwich. We make a good homemade soup and a good homemade salad, and people have that for lunch. And then we do nice things for breakfast. But we don't cook every night. We will cook the first night, though, and it will be a wonderful feast. At any rate, we do look forward to this greatly, but we're sorry to be gone from you all.
And that'll be 2 weeks from tonight, the 31st.
Yeah. So we'll be here next week. Just third. Lana, if you're out there, you'll be here, won't you? So I look forward to seeing everybody. We don't know, but, you know, a few of the people that are coming. There are lots of new people this year. And we're really looking forward to meeting our newest members of the family.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit llresearch.org, which is the archive website featuring the Law of One material and over 1,500 channeling transcripts and other publications as well. LL Research's community website is bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. Thank you for those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for the next show, please visit bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, and go to the Bring Forth 2 subforum and post to the thread discussion Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, and that is the 24th of August. We will not be here on the 31st. Next Friday, 8 o'clock Eastern. Have a great week.
Where's the music?
Where is the music? I don't know why it's not playing.
Roll, roll, roll your boat.
I have no idea. I did it like I always do. That's strange. Ah, there we go.
Okay.